This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. Welcome to The Showrunner, where we have one goal: teach you how to develop, launch, and run a remarkable show. Ready?
And welcome back to The Showrunner. This is episode number 70 of The Showrunner. I am your host, Jared Morris, VP of Marketing for Rainmaker Digital, and I am joined by my co-host, Jonathan Naster, host of Hack the Entrepreneur and many other things. Jonathan, how are you today?
I'm doing excellent, Jared. I wish there was a long form of Jared I could use right now, but
so we know that regular people call you John. Your friends can call you Johnny. Who exactly calls you Jonathan?
My mother.
Your mother. Okay.
And other people when they're angry. One or two other people in life when they're angry.
Ah, okay. So when we get angry, we can call you Jonathan Naster. All right, folks, keep that in mind. So Johnny, real quick, to kick off today's episode, I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you ready?
I'm on the spot, so I guess that means yes.
That's true. I don't know. You can't really be ready to be put on the spot, but what are the four essential elements of a remarkable podcast? We haven't talked about these in a while, and I figured I don't want to get too far into season two before we quickly review these, especially for our newer folks.
I believe it's a USP. So authenticity, usefulness, sustainability, and then profitability.
Yes. And you can use the mnemonic device, a unicorn sings plaintively, to remember those, A-U-S-P. That'll work. But yes, you are correct. Authenticity, usefulness, sustainability, and profitability. And I think over these next few episodes, we'll probably be touching on, you know, on these as we move forward. And today we're going to talk about one specifically, and that is profitability. Because ultimately, Johnny, I mean, look, obviously we're here to create authentic connections, and we want to be useful, and we want to create shows that will last. But the other thing for a podcast to remain and to grow and to be great is that it's got to be profitable. It's got to be profitable in the sense of, for us as showrunners, the amount of time that we put into it, we've got to get more out than we put in. Our audience has to get a payoff, a return on the investment of their time. And it's not just about time. It's also about money. At some point, our shows have to make money to pay for themselves and to even possibly become profit centers of their own. And today we want to talk about that some. We want to talk about sponsorship and some important lessons that I learned recently from something I went through with one of my shows, that if you pay attention to these, if you pay heed to these lessons, they will make you more money. Not that they might make you more money, they will make more money if you do these. And so we wanted to outline these and discuss them today.
I say we do it.
Are you ready, Jonathan?
Let's jump into it, Jared.
Let's do it. All right. So, Johnny, I'd like to tell you a quick story, if I may. So this is in relation to my show, The Assembly Call, which we've talked about on the show a lot. Started as a post-game show for Indiana basketball games and has become kind of a year-round thing now. You know, along with the podcast, we have a website that we do a lot with. And we had a sponsor last year. SeatGeek sponsored us. They were really getting into sports sponsorships, and they really wanted to go with niche sites. And so they reached out to us. And that has become a really, really good relationship for us. They re-upped again for this year. And actually, you know, I didn't mention this as a lesson, but we can preface this by saying that, you know, once you do get a sponsor, you really want to do a good job. Treat it like a partnership, as you said before, Johnny, as you have said many times. So it can sustain and so it can keep going. And so that sponsorship for us, SeatGeek, has continued. But as I entered the new season coming up, and this show really gets hot and heavy during basketball season, which is from November until about April, I really wanted to expand and get more into sponsorship. And I didn't exactly know how I wanted to do that. You know, I've gone over to Midroll and submitted the show there, and they consistently tell us that we don't have big enough traffic numbers, which is a little bit disappointing, but hey, it is what it is. And so I just realized that, you know, we're a niche show. We do very well with our niche. You know, we get donations. We have the SeatGeek sponsorship. But to get additional sponsorships, it was really going to have to be, you know, going out and finding opportunities, identifying opportunities. And this happened several weeks ago when something went viral on Twitter. So there's a t-shirt company, and they're called Hoosier Proud. Indiana, we're Hoosiers. That's what the state nickname is, and that's what our university nickname is. So Hoosier Proud. And they created a t-shirt that went viral. And so I saw this, and I thought to myself, you know, we make t-shirts for the assembly call, and we could use a new t-shirt provider. And, you know, Hoosier Proud, that name, it really is a nice branding fit with what we do. I wonder if there would be some kind of opportunity there. I had no idea, you know, kind of what their background was, you know, if they even thought about podcast sponsorship, you know, anything about them, if they, you know, knew what the show was. And so I ended up just reaching out to the guy and just let him, you know, introduce myself, said, hey, you know, I run the assembly call, gave him a few just quick overview numbers. So I'd love to talk to you sometime about a potential sponsorship, because I think there could be some real synergy here between our audience and the people that you're targeting. Emailed me back, we talked, and within about 48 hours, we had ironed out the details for a really nice sponsorship deal for the entire season. And they're actually going to sponsor at the beginning of every episode. We have what's called the banner moment, where we highlight, you know, the biggest moment from the game, and it's now going to be called the Hoosier Proud banner moment. And so they're sponsoring that part of the show. They're also going to be sponsoring some of our email blasts that we send out. And it was a great lesson. There were three lessons. I'm going to detail those. But it was really just eye-opening to me because, you know, I think a lot of times with podcast sponsorships, we think that it's this thing that only big sites get, or that we have to go through mid-roll to do it, or that it's going to be real complicated. And it was a really great eye-opener and reminder that, look, at the end of the day, a sponsorship is going to be about a relationship that you can build. And that relationship can begin simply by reaching out and beginning a conversation. And that doesn't mean that you have to have an exact end in mind. And maybe you reach out and try and start a conversation and it doesn't even happen. But sometimes it does, and you go down the road and it turns into something really special and really lucrative. And so I'm going to detail three lessons here in a second, three specific lessons that I learned and how you can apply that to your show. But just wanted to get your thoughts on that, Johnny, because, you know, in part, I was inspired by you and what you did, you know, with your sponsorships before you'd even launched with Hack the Entrepreneur. And the idea of, look, you know, treat sponsors like partnerships, treat people like people, be human, and good things are going to happen from it.
Yeah, it's good advice. And the way it's making me think, like, I think that I've maybe lost some of that because, I mean, you mentioned mid-roll a lot. They're great to work with, but I don't get contact with my sponsors anymore. They middleman the whole thing. And so it makes my job easier in that way. But at the same time, you lose that connection that I used to have to people like FreshBooks.
Yeah.
And so that does get hard. And so it's hard to scale, I guess, keeping those relationships going, especially if you have two different ad spots a day and you're running three shows a week. It's like, it's a lot of relationships to keep up with. But I admire going back to that. And almost like, as you were explaining this, I was like, man, I should just go back to that model. Cause it was cool. It was good. I liked it. I think it's more profitable. Like not even just monetarily, but I think for the show and for the sponsor too. And then you just hustle, man. That was awesome. Yeah, go viral, reach out, like let's make something work.
Well, and it's funny because now I think back to other opportunities when I could have done this in the past and hadn't. And I don't know what it was about, you know, this moment where I was like, you know, this would be a good thing. Let me just reach out here real quick instead of waiting or thinking of all the reasons why it wouldn't happen. And this leads to lesson number one, which is to always be on the lookout for potential opportunities. You never know when they're going to pop up, and you really want to be on the lookout so that you can identify them and take action. Because that's kind of the sub lesson here, is be on the lookout for potential opportunities, and then you got to take action on them, okay? And we'll talk about in lesson two how to be ready when those opportunities hit. But, you know, you may be thinking, okay, I'll be on the lookout for opportunities, but what am I looking for? Well, one thing you're looking for, obviously, is synergy between their audience and your audience. Because if you don't have that, it's not going to matter, right? I mean, the SeatGeek sponsorship wouldn't do anything if they didn't sell tickets to athletic events and were a sports podcast. So that obviously works, right? With Hoosier Proud, we know that our audience buys gear and buys t-shirts because they've already done that with gear that we sell. But more specifically, we are a very Indiana-focused audience. It's a niche audience. And Hoosier Proud sells t-shirts for people from Indiana. I mean, they're t-shirts of, you know, the state logo and mottos of the state. It's the kind of stuff our audience will really like. So there's perfect synergy there. So that's what will get the sponsor, the potential sponsor, looking and say, hey, okay, you know, we're looking to reach more of our target audience. They're talking to these people. Okay, so let's start this conversation, all right? The next thing when it comes to these, you know, being on the lookout for potential opportunities is make sure that there is definite value for your audience as part of the deal. Okay, so now that we're doing the sponsorship with Hoosier Proud, they're giving us a promo code that we can read out on the show so that our audience gets 15% off of the shirts. And that was important to me. It's not just, hey, Hoosier Proud is sponsoring this. It's Hoosier Proud is sponsoring this. And because you're an Assembly Call listener, you get something special. So there's value for the audience because they're finding out about a really cool site, about a really cool source for potential shirts they may like, and they get a discount. And maybe you don't have to get a discount. You may not be able to work that out with the sponsor, but there's got to be value for the audience because the audience can be the third party in these sponsorship conversations that doesn't get taken into account, you know? And I'm now taking 45 seconds to a minute at the beginning of our show to talk about a sponsor, which will do the audience some good in finding out about them. It does them even more good, the fact that they get a discount. So as much value as you can bring to your audience as possible. And then, of course, the ability for you to show value to the sponsor. So if I didn't think that sponsoring the banner moment and doing this promo code for the audience would give value to them, I don't want to, you know, take their money right now, show them no value, and then, you know, run and hide in the other direction. I really want to make sure that I'm going into it knowing, okay, you're giving us value by paying us money to sponsor. Our audience is getting value. And now I know that I can show you value because of this. And when you find opportunities where you can check those boxes, that's gold. And you don't wait to reach out. Go reach out and start the conversation. You don't have to have a professionally done PDF and a salesperson and do it all fancy. Just open an email. You know, send a Twitter direct message. Get the conversation going and see where it leads.
Right. How much did you direct the conversation around sort of the metrics that you wanted to direct it around?
I put a few big picture metrics just in the initial email, just so he would know. Or actually, it was in the second email. And it turns out he was a big listener to the show, which is kind of nice. So that came totally out of the blue. But I didn't want to get too bogged down in the metrics. And what's interesting is I actually got more into the metrics when it came to our email list and some of the additional non-podcast things they're sponsoring, which I'll get to in the third lesson. That was actually where the metrics came in more than just the podcast. Now, part of that is because he's a listener, kind of knows, you know, that the show is growing and has a decent audience size. So I didn't have to do that. So it may just depend on how much you have to educate the potential sponsor on who you are and what you do. I didn't have to do that as much with the podcast. I did it more for the email.
Yeah, I love it because I know a lot of people get stuck in. I mean, 2 years ago, the first question was like, what are your downloads? And a year ago, it had changed. And now to me, it's almost completely changed. People want to like deal with you as like the brand. And not just like, what are your downloads? So, and I know people fear that, right? Well, I don't have the downloads. And so they're afraid to even make that first reach out to the people. But I think everyone will find that the more you kind of do this, people still want to know what your downloads are, but it's not the make it or break it, yes or no. Like with mid-roll, it is. They only deal with certain shows of certain level, and that's just them. But they're not sponsors. They're like a middleman for sponsors. So just know that these metrics that you feel are going to hold you back are just, that's you in your head. There's ways around everything. And Jared's kind of showing us how to do it.
Yeah. So that's lesson number one. Always be on the lookout for potential opportunities. Now, lesson number two is be ready for those opportunities when they hit. Okay, so what really made this go and made it go quickly is being able to say, basically being able to have a vision. Okay, so when I first sent the email, I thought, okay, Hoosier Proud, how perfect would it be for them to sponsor the banner moment? Because in a way, that whole section of the show is it's kind of like our proudest moment as fans, right? What's the moment in this game that made us the most excited that we're going to win a championship? So calling it the Hoosier Proud banner moment, I mean, we almost could have named it that without a sponsor from the very beginning. Like, it is perfect. And so having that section of the show already as a potentially sponsorable segment, that allowed me to be ready for when this opportunity hit. It's like, okay, Hoosier Proud banner moment. This is perfect. You know, so when I'm talking to the guy, it's like, hey, you know, we'll call it the Hoosier Proud banner moment. We'll give the banner moment. Then we'll do about, you know, 30 to 45 seconds right after that talking about Hoosier Proud and then move on. And it was great. And I think if it had been a little bit more nebulous, like, hey, do you want to sponsor the show? Okay, well, you know, maybe that gets the conversation going. But the fact that there was a clear vision, a clear element they were going to sponsor, that really, I think, allowed it to hit home for him, especially since he had never done any podcast advertising before, for exactly where this will go, what will it look like? Oh, yeah, I can envision that. Yes, let's do it. So I think that's one big lesson here is consider having some recurring segments on your show like this that might be sponsorable. You know, the banner moment, Johnny, you have the hack on Hack the Entrepreneur. And I don't know if you've ever thought about having that sponsored, but you certainly could, you know, I mean, there's, you know, I can think of tons and tons of different examples of how that would work. Have you ever thought about having the hack sponsored?
That was the very first thing that ever came to my head when I created the hack, was going to be the hack sponsored by or brought to you by this and then into it.
Yeah.
I couldn't sell it because it was so far into my show. It was, and I pushed so hard, like doing direct sponsorships, and I was selling sponsorships at the time. People were buying them, but they wanted to buy them in the pre-roll, in the mid-roll, which they wanted before the 40% mark of the show. And I was like, the thing people are listening to, like, I know my data is showing me, is that people are listening to the hack, and just I couldn't. And mid-roll wouldn't even sell it. I couldn't even, which is crazy because it goes, because I agree with you 100%, having that sponsored place. But the problem is you do the banner moment at the very beginning, which is really, really smart, and my hacks afterwards. So it kind of messes up my way of doing
this.
But you're absolutely right. It's brilliant, brilliant idea, and everybody should put that into their show.
Well, but that's a great lesson, is there is a bias for the beginning and middle parts of shows. So remember that, especially if you're going to do these recurring segments. I was just listening to a fantasy football podcast, you know, and they had the Cane's Chicken like stud of the week or something, you know, and it's about 15 minutes into the show, and it's kind of it's a recurring segment. It's sponsored. Again, it allows your sponsor to kind of visualize themselves in your show a little bit easier. And so consider those recurring segments, but then also have your ad spots set and filled even if by yourself. So it's going to be a lot easier to sell ad space on your show if there is already ad space on your show. Okay. And so, you know, the recurring segments can be a potential place for an ad, but if you're trying to set your show up for success to have ads in the future, and maybe it's new and you think, well, I don't have any sponsors yet. Okay, that's fine. Guess what? Then your email list sponsors your show. And that's, you know, for your, after you do your introduction and you want to dive into an ad read, then you talk for a minute about why people should get on your email list. And then when you do have a potential sponsor, you can say, hey, this slot right here, this is where we'll do it for you. And that way your audience is used to it. They can get into the rhythm of your show. It's not going to totally disrupt everything when you add a sponsor. And it's easier, again, for you to sell a spot to your sponsor that already exists as opposed to having to create something brand new. Just it makes that conversation easier and, again, allows them to visualize themselves in your show better, which is going to help get them more excited to do it.
Yeah, always be running ad spots. And then to take it even one step further, Jared, is I would push everybody to have a sponsorship page on your site. Because one thing you never know, like you said, you finally reached out to this sponsor and he's a listener. Like, I'm sure he's been to your site numerous times and there's possibly no sponsorship page. And it's one thing for somebody to work for a company or own a company and listen to your show, because you never know who's listening. But then to be like, wow, they're going to go to your site and look for the sponsorship page and be like, oh, there isn't one. It's such a huge leap for somebody. Well, maybe I'll go randomly through the contact form and ask them. Your barrier to entry is too high now for most people. So you should, even if you don't have sponsors yet, you should at least put on there that you are looking to take them. You don't have to have prices and packages, but just a page that says, yes, you are looking for sponsors and here's how to reach you. Very simple, but make it easy for people to sponsor you if they do get the chance to discover or hear your show.
That's a huge part of being ready for when those opportunities hit. Absolutely. So lesson one, be on the lookout for potential opportunities. Lesson two, be ready for those opportunities when they hit. And now lesson three is be more than a podcaster, be a showrunner. Okay. What do we mean by that? That means create an experience for your audience that isn't just a podcast, right? We've talked on here so often about the power of an email list and what you can do with your website to create more of an experience than just what happens with the audio. Because you limit yourself if all you can offer to a sponsor is a slot in your show. But man, you can really expand what you can do. And I learned this just over the last few weeks with SeatGeek and Hoosier Proud, because they would have paid X for the podcast sponsorship, but they ended up paying a lot more because we incorporated some of the other elements of what we do. So for example, every week we do what we call Six Banner Saturday. It's a news roundup. It's just a curated email newsletter that rounds up the most recent news in IU basketball. And that goes out to our email list, and we also post it on our blog. We also, for our members, every Friday do a deal of the week. So it's an affiliate play. I've been doing this for a little while now. I'll go find a good affiliate deal on some IU gear, and we send it out to the email list. Well, when I was talking with Hoosier Proud, I told him, hey, we do these deals of the week. We could also basically dedicate one deal every month to a new one of your shirts. And that'll be, you know, the deal of the month. And so he's like, well, that sounds really good. You know, but he's like, I'm ready to do the podcast sponsorship. I'm still a little iffy on the email thing because I'm not exactly sure how that would work, right? So what I did is that next week, that shirt that went viral, I just made that the deal of the week. I just did it, you know, without telling him, I just did it and said, here, we'll do a test, see how this is. That drove a bunch of sales. He was able to visualize what it would look like. And now he's ready to do that part of the sponsorship, right? So it's adding on to it, and it's you know, you're engaging your audience, obviously, in more ways than your podcast. But from the sponsorship point of view, you're giving the sponsor more opportunities to be exposed to the audience, different ways, which is going to be extremely helpful. You know, with our email newsletter now, after the very first section, after the first story, right after that is a little section for SeatGeek. And we link out to, you know, hot deals on IU tickets, talk about how we're really proud to have SeatGeek as a sponsor. And it's just there. So it's an ad, but it's also kind of native content in a sense, because we're giving IU fans the best deals on IU football and basketball tickets. And so it really fits with the content, right? But again, you know, I showed it to him. He was able to visualize himself in there. And now instead of SeatGeek just paying to sponsor our podcast, they're also sponsoring that. And when we do our bracketology blog post later in the basketball season, they're going to be the sponsor for that. And so it was an entire package, not just, here, you're getting the sponsorship slot on every show. It's, you are getting the assembly call content package, a sponsorship on the show, inclusion in our email newsletter, inclusion on blog posts, and it makes it so much more valuable for them. And so, you know, again, we talk about being a podcaster, not a showrunner. It's all about creating a great audience experience, right? It's applying those the four essential elements of a remarkable podcast, and especially the authenticity and usefulness to create this great experience. But a byproduct of that, especially when it comes outside of the podcast, is you now have more real estate that is going to be potentially attractive and sponsorable for a sponsor. Keep that in mind. And the more that you do that, the better off that you're going to be, and the more attractive package you can offer to potential sponsors.
So good. So you've given the listener three important lessons about podcast sponsorship that will, in fact, make them more money. I want to cover two things, or yeah. I want you to, if you could, two sticking points that I see that you've taken them now to getting this sponsorship. What did you do for a contract? Did you have one or not? And what did it look like roughly? And then did you make it so you had to get paid before you did sponsorship, or did you work something else out?
Excellent. So as far as the contract, I do not have a contract with these folks. It's all in email. You know, with SeatGeek, I've already worked with them for a year and they've been fine. And so I felt, you know, good about expanding it a little bit more. And, you know, same thing with Hoosier Proud. There's no set contract. It's all there in email. So if either one of us argues about the details, we can always point back to the email. But I didn't feel the need. I have, you know, have had good relationships with these folks. They've done everything they've said they're going to do. So have I. So that's never come up. If the dollar amounts were bigger, you know, maybe I would think about it, but I haven't felt the need to do it. So I didn't. What was the second part?
And payment. Is it payment in advance or?
Yeah, they're going to pay in advance. So that was what we agreed to, is pay for everything up front. For SeatGeek, that worked out. Instead of me invoicing and then paying every 2 weeks, which had actually created some issues just because they go through a third party vendor, you know, for the payments, and that just, there had been some communication issues there. Everything was fine. There was just, the communication wasn't always great. So it made sense for them. Hey, we'll pay you up front. Let's just get all this, you know, out of the way up front. And same thing with Hoosier Proud. And with them, I actually said, you know, I actually gave them a discount to pay up front. So I actually said, if you pay up front, it'll be X. If you wait, you know, if you want to pay by, you know, by week or by month, that's fine. It'll just be this, but you'll save money paying up front. And so actually for them, I made it kind of an incentive to pay up front.
I love it.
And I will say, the other thing I did do with SeatGeek is because it's, you know, it's more than just them sponsoring, like I said, the Assembly Call podcast. It's the emails, and there's a second podcast that we're coming out with. And this is the other thing, we're creating a new podcast, and they're going to sponsor that new podcast without it ever being out or getting a download, you know? And he's like, you know, we trust you guys, you know, we're willing to take, you know, take that risk. And that's priced into what the price was. But I created a big spreadsheet that went by month exactly what they would get, you know? So, you know, 6 episodes of the Assembly Call, 3 episodes of this new show, this email. So it's very, very concrete. Like, this is what you will get. And so that's all in a spreadsheet. So again, no like signed contract, but everything is spelled out in detail so that there are no miscommunications and everybody's on the same page.
Excellent. I love it. I love it. And I was hoping that was going to be the answer, because to me, that makes it easier for everyone to get started. You don't need lawyers. You don't need all that. But definitely I did the same thing, which was always getting paid in advance. And actually everything that's outside of mid-roll that I do personally, it's all paid in advance. That's just how it works. And mm-hmm. people are used to it, which makes it easier for you and less risky.
Yeah. And you can price it that way. I mean, have two prices in your head. If someone does want to pay every week, then set a price that makes that worthwhile for you, if that's what's going to be the case. But then obviously you can give a discount for paying up front. And I think I agree with you. You want to make that one more enticing because it's easier for you and better for you in the long run. So
awesome.
So quick review. Lesson one, always be on the lookout for potential opportunities. Lesson two, be ready for those opportunities when they hit. And by all means, lesson three, be more than a podcaster, be a showrunner, create a true audience experience, not just a podcast experience. And it's better for your audience. It's better for potential sponsors. And obviously it is better for you. Take these three lessons, use them to make more money. I certainly am. And I think that you can as well. All right, everybody. That concludes this episode of The Showrunner. Once again, we come in at under 30 minutes. That's our new goal for season two. Right, Jonathan?
Yes. But before we go yes. to showrunner.fm, join the Showrunner newsletter and get it. We've updated that as well as the format here. We've updated the format of the newsletter, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. So it includes free announcements of the public events, which it's going to be moved off Blab, but we're not sure yet. But that's where we're going to tell you about it. So get on that new list. Each new week's episode comes out there, a simple link to it to pass you through, and you can check it out on the site. And that highly recommend section we used to do has now been snipped and gone because it's just not efficient enough for us anymore. So go to showrunner.fm.
We may still recommend things, but the email is just going to be a little bit more informal and personal than kind of templated, which I think will be good for everybody.
It was really fun to write yesterday, so yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
It was good.
showrunner.fm is the place to get on that list.
Yep. All right. We will talk to you next week on another brand new episode. Take care, everybody.
Take care.